Blog Talk Radio.
The following broadcast is brought to you by the iGolf Sports Network.
Golf Talk Live is sponsored by the iGolf Sports Network and Golf Tips Magazine. Here's Andrew to tell you more about our sponsors.
iGolf Sports is a live stream broadcast and media production company providing quality programming designed to attract the golfing enthusiast. And Golf Tips, the game's most in-depth instruction magazine, including reviews on the latest equipment, tips from top teaching professionals, all designed to help you improve from tee to green. Welcome to Golf Talk Live with your host, Ted Odorico. Join Ted each week as he speaks with some of the best in golf. This week's special guest will join us a bit later. But first up is another great discussion on Coach's Corner. So let's introduce tonight's Coach's Corner panel.
All right. Good evening, everybody. And once again, welcome to Golf Talk Live. I'm your host, Ted Odorico, and we've got a great show for you this evening. As always, we're going to be starting things off with another great discussion on Coach's Corner. And I'm looking forward to having the guys. I've got a couple of great professionals on tonight. And then a little bit later on, I'm going to be joined by a very special guest. My featured guest tonight is Pete Holman. He's the co-creator of Golf Forever, and he's got quite a resume. I'll read that out a little bit later on, but I'm very excited to have him join me this evening as well. But let me introduce the guys, and I will bring them on. First up, of course, is John Decker. He is the director of instruction at the Medallion Club in Columbus, Ohio. He's also one of the senior editors and a top 25 instructor at Golf Tips Magazine. Formerly, he was the head instructor at the Grand Cypress Academy of Golf in Orlando, and was also the 2015 Southern Ohio Teacher of the Year. Authored his first book was Golf Is My Life, Glorifying God Through the Game, which of course includes a Bible study, and he's also available for public speaking. And a little bit later on, as we wrap up, I'll get him to let you know about his second book, his follow-up from that one. Also joining on the show is Clint Wright. He's a 30-plus year member of the PGA and one of the partners at TGM Golf. TGM Golf is a proponent of the R3 approach, which he's talked about many times on the show over the years. And I consider him to be one of the best covering the short game, and has become a favorite here on Coach's Corner. So please welcome Clint Wright and John Decker. Good evening, guys. Welcome.
Yeah, I'm doing good. Glad to be here.
All right. All right, good stuff. All right, so we're going to talk about, and we're going to get into quite a bit of detail. This is from, and I've mentioned this a few times over the first part of the season here, I've put together a number of golf books that I'm going to be releasing over the next few months. And this particular one here, I'm really excited about because it deals with an area at length, to be honest. And it's called Mastering Your Golf Practice Routine. We're going to hit on some things from the first chapter that I think are very important. And because there are so many different components to practice, I'm going to get you guys to really isolate based on the questions I give you in these specific areas. So in other words, don't add to another area, and there's a reason why it'll make sense once we get going along. So the first thing, and I'm going to start with the order I introduced you, and John, that's types of golf practice. So what I mean by that is there's really sort of three areas. There's structured practice, unstructured practice, and competitive practice. I'd like for you to touch on the structured practice and unstructured practice. And then I'm going to give Clint the competitive practice and what we mean by that. And I'm certainly going to throw in a few comments along the way as well. But talk about what we refer to when we say structured practice. What are we talking about here? And this is strictly a practice routine. It's not not to be confused with a warm-up. This is an actual practice routine. So talk about those three areas if you wouldn't mind.
Well, Ted, first of all, thank you for having me on the show tonight. And Clint, I look forward, as always, to being on with you as well. You know, this is an interesting way of looking at practice with structured and unstructured. You know, I take that as structured is something that's set kind of in stone, like you have like a rigid formula that you may do, whether it's in a lesson or whether it's outside of the lesson. If you're practicing, obviously that's going to be more outside of the lesson, or maybe your teacher's giving you a game plan. Okay, you know, John, you need to work on your irons, or you need to work on your driving, or you need to work on your wedges or putting or whatever it is. And so that you go to the driving range with a specific agenda of what you're going to work on. That's, to me, is the way I would look at structured practice. So you know, I used to actually write like a to-do list. I would write a list of, you know, this is what I want to work on when I go to the driving range. And I would take an hour or two and divide up my time, and I would try to hit all the areas. I wouldn't spend more time, a lot more time on one versus the other. Unstructured practice, I think, is more reactionary to what you're going through at the time. For example, if you go out and play 18 holes of golf, and let's say you putt poorly, unstructured practice, in my opinion, would be like coming off the golf course and going to the putting green, you know, and say, wow, I really need to work on my putting or my bunker or chipping or whatever it is. You'll see tour players do this a lot. When they come off of the golf course, they will go to work on things that maybe they struggled with that day. But as far as practice goes, I mean, that's when you use those terms, that's kind of what popped out in my head in describing, you know, structured versus unstructured practice.
Yeah, perfect. You hit it right on the nose. And essentially, just sort of recapture a little bit, structured practice is basically characterized by an organized and goal-oriented nature. So you're exactly right. It's when you're dialing in on specific things, maybe your coaches, as you put it, John, has put forth a to-do list, and you're really dialing in on specific areas that obviously need to be worked on. And by doing it that way, you've got more of a focus on what it is that's important and what's going to help you become a better player. Unpractice, obviously, is, in contrast, the opposite to structured practice, and it's more of a free form and spontaneous. So as you mentioned, you know, maybe you're playing around and a certain area of your game you're noticing a weakness in. So you're going to focus on that more when you come off the golf course. Again, you're going to focus on it, but it's not a structured practice. It's basically reactionary, as you pointed out. So you hit them right on the nose. And I think it's important that people understand that, because when they go up to the range or to the golf course in a practice session, don't really focus on a structured practice. They sort of willy-nilly, I'll hit a few shots here and maybe I'll rake and hit a few more over here. And they're not really very well organized. And I think if you want to become better, once you've isolated where the problem areas are, you need to then develop, and again, with the help of your golf coach or your teacher professional, you can put together a more structured practice routine so that when you go out and spend, whether it's an hour or more, you're going to be more focused on doing the right things and working on the right areas that are going to benefit you down the road. The other one I mentioned, and Clint, I'll get you to sort of talk about this a little bit,
sure,
is competitive practice. And that sort of involves simulating more of the conditions that you might be faced with in tournament play. So again, if somebody's going up, again, it might involve a little bit of structure or unstructured depending on the circumstances. But the idea here is more of a simulation to what you might be faced with out in the golf course. So maybe you could expand a little bit on that if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, sure. Well, I think that the competition practice is a little more complicated than maybe a structured practice when you go out there, other than the fact that if I'm going to play in a competition, I know the golf course, I'm pretty sure I know what kind of shots I'm going to be required to play that day or the next day. So I'm going to try to simulate, which is really difficult to do other than just pure shot making. It's difficult to simulate the emotions of playing in competition. But you can go out and say, look, I know I'm going to hit, you know, this 6-iron on this hole, or what I'm going to do, I'm going to then try to hit the shot that I intend to hit on maybe a par 3 or any hole, really just play my way through the round. We know the golf course, I'm going to drive the ball, I need to hit a little cut shot off number 1, so I'm going to try to hit a cut. And I'm going to rehearse that because I know I'm going to hit it today. It's not like I may, but I know that on these particular holes, this is what's going to be required of me. So I need to rehearse. I don't know what I want to say is practice. I would call it more rehearsal. I want to rehearse the shot I know I'm going to play today. Now, I know I can't determine every shot I'm going to hit that day, But of the big, particularly off the tee, on the par threes, I have a pretty good idea of what I'm going to have to do on those holes. So I'm going to try to rehearse those before I go out to play. And then we all know it's impossible to simulate the emotions of playing in competition. That's very difficult. The only way that you get to that is to be competitive, play as much as you can in the competitions to where you get to where you learn how to manage those emotions during the competition. That's the important part. But again, the performance or competitive practice in my mind would be simply trying to rehearse the shots on the range that I know I'm going to have to play that day, which then kind of takes some of that nervousness out of that shot, because now I've already rehearsed it a couple of times. I know how to hit this shot, and I know I can be successful because I've rehearsed it a few times, and you can go about maybe trying to play that shot with a little bit more confidence and a little less stress when you're in the competition emotions.
Well said. And you're exactly 100% right. Again, the idea here, especially if you're playing a different course, if you're playing your home course and you're familiar with the surroundings, you have a pretty good idea that typically the type of shots you're faced with, so it's a little bit easier. But when you're playing, maybe a buddy's invited you to their course, or you're playing in a tournament at a course that you're not used to, again, you're limited on the shots that you're going to be able to practice because you're not going to know exactly every shot that you are going to be faced with. But there are some commonalities. And again, as you said, off the tee or maybe par threes as an example, you want to make sure that you're utilizing a lot of the clubs that you may be faced with in real time. While you're playing, and you want to be able to mimic as much or rehearse, as you said, those types of shots on the practice tee before you could actually go out and play. So I think that's a great idea. The next one it might seem very simple. John, I'm going to come back to you on this, but I think people need to understand how to sort of break up the different types of practice in the practice environment. So we've got three areas. I'm going to get you to touch on the first one, and then I'm going to give the last two, I'm sort of reversing this role, if you will, to Clint. So the first one is the driving range. It's obviously a staple of the practice environment. Obviously, there's the putting green and the golf course are areas that can be utilized, and we'll touch on those after. But the driving range, there's a lot that can be done here. And I think it's not just, again, we want to get away from the sort of raking and hitting. We want to be able to utilize the range as best as possible. So let's focus on the range itself, if you wouldn't mind, John. How can we best utilize this experience to get the most out of it?
Well, I actually wrote a little bit about this in one of the Golf Tips Magazine articles. And the first thing that I always ask my students to do when they go to the driving range is to define why they're there. So, for example, if I'm getting ready to tee off and I've got 20 minutes before my tee time, I am not at the driving range to work on my lesson that I just took yesterday or a week ago. I am there to warm up. So sometimes I go to the driving range to simply warm up and just get my body loose so I don't injure myself, so my muscles are warmed up and I'm ready to go. So that's one reason. Or am I going to, have you just had a lesson maybe the day before and you're going there to practice something specifically that your instructor gave you? And so the second reason that I would go to the driving range would be to work on the lesson, to work on, going back to the structured practice. That's where you're going in specifically saying, okay, I'm a slicer and my teacher has worked with me on my grip and I am going to, for the next hour, all I'm going to focus on is my grip, or I'm going to focus on my ball position. Whatever it is the teacher gave you to work on, you're going to work on that. And then the third reason is to practice playing the game. So sometimes when I'm at the driving range, I'm not thinking about my lesson. I'm not getting ready to go play golf, but there's no reason why you cannot play golf on the driving range. You can play your entire 18 holes of golf. So if you have only have an hour after work to spend at the driving range and you feel really good about your game and you're going to play golf maybe the next day, why not, like Clint was saying, why not rehearse it right there on the driving range? Play the pole. It's a driver and a 7-iron. Hit your driver, then hit your 7-iron. Okay, I hit a bad shot there. I better hit a pitch shot here and then hit a pitch shot. And then the second hole's a par three. It's normally an 8-iron. So then you pull out your 8-iron. And then you basically, in your mind, execute, go through, and you're working on your pre-shot routine. You're working on the situation, because, you know, if you're just sitting there raking balls and you're hitting eight irons full, you know, you're going to get in a rhythm where all of a sudden everything is pure. Eventually you'll find that rhythm. It might take you 20 or 30 balls, but eventually you'll find that rhythm. But if you hit a shot and, oh my goodness, I didn't hit a good one there. Now I've got to hit a pitch shot over a bunker. And then you immediately go and you grab your sand wedge or your lob wedge and you hit that pitch shot. That's more realistic of how you play golf. So you go to the range to either warm up, you go to work on something specifically that your teacher has you working on as instructor practice, or you practice your play. You practice what you're actually going to do on the golf course. So if you'll define why you're there, when you're on the driving range, you're going to do well. But the last thing that you want to be doing is, you know, 20 minutes before your tee time is working on your golf swing, working on the lesson you just took. You've got to define why you're there, and you got to stick to it.
Yeah, that's a great – that's an excellent point that you raise up there towards the end. Good job, John, by the way. But, you know, a lot of golfers fall into that trap where they start to tinker around, especially in a warm-up session. Warm-up, as I mentioned in the beginning, you know, this is really talking about our practice sessions, whether it's with or without your golf coach. A warm-up session is a little bit different, and the last thing that you want to do is start working on swing mechanics and things like that in a warm-up, because you're getting ready to play maybe in 20, 30 minutes, whatever the case may be. And if you start monkeying around with things, then you run the risk of things collapsing when you get on the golf course. So it's very great point that you raise. I mean, you've got to understand to put things in the right perspective. So job well done. Thank you, John. Clint, we're going to got two areas here I'm going to get you to touch on. One is your favorite is the putting green, I know, and then also the golf course as a practice environment.
Right.
Obviously, on-course practice is good. So let's talk about the putting green. What is its purpose? What are some of the things? How can we best utilize this surface now for getting ready to, you know, work on certain areas of our game? Maybe you can touch on a few of them, give some examples, and then let's skip over to what are we going to do as a practice out of, actually on the golf course, maybe
sure.
in a playing lesson as an example. So go ahead.
Sure. Yeah, these are, you know, pretty simple ideas, actually. If you take example for the putting green, we're playing today. So I get to the golf course, I'm going to play today. I'm going to spend my practice time there trying to get a sense of feel for speed for that particular day. We all know that the greens change relatively every day a little bit here and there. So I'm trying to go out that morning or afternoon before I play to, as we've talked many times about, developing how far my benchmark strokes go, trying to determine the speed compared to maybe last week or yesterday, in order to give me feel for how hard, obviously, I want to hit putts, because that's going to be important to me today. Again, like you spoke or John spoke about on the range, we're not going the day I'm playing. I'm not going out to the putting green for practice putting session, you know, or panic session. I gotta do something. I haven't been putting good, so I want to go to that putting green real quick to try to figure out the stroke, see if I can get it online. That's pretty much a recipe for not putting good that day, because we've ignored the speed factors. We're still tinkering with our stroke, and we're probably not going to be real successful. So day of play, my practice and time I spend on the putting green will be 99% directed towards how fast the greens are today, how they're rolling. Now, if it's a non-playing day, I'm really not too concerned about the speed of that putting green. I'm more there to work on the mechanics of my stroke, work on my ability to line up properly, work on the fundamentals of putting that I can use better the day I'm going to play. But that's the day I'm going to work on the mechanics, or what we call the fundamentals of putting, making sure that I can hit my target. You know, I've picked out my line. I've got my intermediate target out in front. I'm going to work that day on improving the technique in order that I feel confident that I can hit my spot when I pick it when I'm playing. So if I've got that confidence going based on my non-playing day practice, then that frees me up on the day I'm playing to not be overly concerned with hitting my spot. It's more about picking that spot based on the speed that I've determined in my pregame practice session on the putting green. Now, if we go on to the golf course attitude, I think one of the smartest things people could do is to go to a tour stop. Don't go to the tournament days. Go in early and watch them play a practice round. They will hit different shots off the tees to determine the best thing to do. That's practice. They're, again, trying to figure out what the best thing to do on that particular hole will be. They don't always just hit it down the fairway and hit it on the green and two-putt and go to the next hole. They take their time. They may drop two or three balls in the bunker. They may drop two or three balls in the rough by the bunkers, around the greens. They're practicing shots that they may have to play in order to give them some experience on that particular golf course from that spot. So, and they very rarely putt towards the hole. They're going to be out there practicing and rehearsing around where they think the hole placements will be during a tournament round. So if you're just out playing a nine holes of golf in the afternoon, if you want to view that as practice, then you may want to find a time where you can hit a couple of balls off of each tee. Try something different, you know. Or when you get up to the green, don't always just putt out. Just go ahead and drop a ball over in the rough and chip it a little bit. Get some experience with some different shots that you may not be able to simulate or practice around the chipping green at the local club or the putting green or the driving range. It may be the only place you could find that shot that you can maybe rehearse a little bit, practice, and try to determine the best way to play those shots if and when you're in those circumstances again. So when you're out playing that nine holes of golf late in the evening, if you view that as practice, then it's not about fairways and greens and two-putt for score. It's about, okay, how can I spend my time here hitting shots that may not necessarily be, quote, greens in regulation that I'm not going to find anywhere else. So take your time and use that to choose some shots. Like if I'm given a playing lesson, I'll go out and I'll throw a ball. Let's play this one over here. Well, it's not on the green. Well, you may be here one day. We need to practice this shot. We need to be able to hit this. So I'm picking and choosing different shots when I'm out on the course on a practice time in order to try those shots that I may not be able to try anywhere else.
Couldn't have put it any better myself. Well said. And, you know, Clint, you're exactly right, because especially with the on-course, playing lesson, most people, when they're working the range, are giving themselves an ideal lie every single time. They're not factoring in uneven lies. They're not factoring in the rough, you know, all of these things. So it's great when you're striping them well, hitting them solid off a perfect lie on the tee, but now all of a sudden you find yourself in rough or some other bunkers, things like that. And a lot of people, unfortunately, don't practice a lot of this stuff unless they're in an actual practice session with their coach, who obviously is going to force them to do that. So it's very, very important. And I like that. And you know, when I used to work years ago at a golf course back up in Canada, I remember there was a woman who used to come out, and she'd get out there at about 5 o'clock, 5:30 in the evening, just to play nine holes. And she would do that very same thing. She'd drop a couple of balls down from different areas, and just because there was nobody on the course at that time, or they were far enough along, and she'd just play nine holes and do exactly that thing, is try some different experience. And she was a great, you know, great golfer, played every single day, but she practiced with a sense of purpose. And I think that's important. So well said.
Absolutely.
John, we're going to shift over now to effective practice habits. And there's three key areas that I want to touch on. I'm going to give you the first two on this one, and then Clint, I'm going to give you the last one to sort of round this particular topic up. So the first one, John, is really setting practice goals. We have to have a sense of, and again, it sort of, I know, falls a little bit under structured practice, but we need to give a little bit more detail here. And then also, one of the other things, too, is even though it's a practice session and we're not in the heat of competition, we still have to develop a way of maintaining our focus during that practice session. So let's talk about setting some practice goals first, and then what we can do to help keep that focus maintained even on a practice session.
Well, practice goals are really, I think, kind of fun and a great way to spend your time when you are practicing. For example, I've heard stories that Tiger Woods would hit 100 3-foot putts a day with his right hand only. That was kind of like him taking a vitamin. I mean, he just did it every single day. And so I've heard stories like that. There's things that you can you know, a lot of times with my students when we're practicing or during a lesson, so especially some of my better players like my high school and college players, is, you know, all right, I'm going to give you three balls and I'm going to give you three situations and you have to get, you know, two out of the three up and down. And, you know, I may give them really difficult situations where, they really got to focus. It really forces them to focus. I might give them a real easy one and then give them kind of a medium to hard one and then a really difficult one and kind of put a little pressure on them. I don't expect them to get them all up and down. That's not realistic. Even the tour players don't do that. But I want them to understand when they do that, okay, this is a basic chip shot. I should get this up and down a high percentage of the time. This is a flop shot off a tight lie over a bunker. I'm not going to get this up and down very often unless I can make a 15 or 20 foot putt. So, you know, they're not beating themselves up when they look at their stats at the end of the round. So that would be examples with the practice goals. You know, there's all kind of stuff, you know, like putting especially. You know, you give yourself a 3 foot putt and you say you've got to make a 10 in a row, and if you miss one, you got to start all over. And I'm telling you, you start doing that and it starts putting a little pressure on you as you're starting to get to, you know, 7 and 8 and 9, because all of a sudden you're getting tired of sitting there hitting putt after putt after putt. And that's a great way to add a little pressure to your practice time so that you can simulate what you might get in a tournament situation. As far as focus goes, the best thing I can tell you about focus is to change things up as much as possible. If you're standing on the driving range, hitting 5 irons as far as you can, shot after shot after shot, or drivers or something like that, and you haven't picked a target out and you're not changing your shot around to where you're hitting maybe to a flag on the right and then changing and hitting to a flag on the left, if you're just doing the same thing over and over again, you're never really going to develop as a player. You're going to just have a full swing that you may not even use on the golf course. I mean, how many times have you, you know, when you go out on the golf course and you see students who will spend their time, you know, making these full swings with clubs that they don't really even use out on the golf course. So it's much better when you're practicing to change up your targets, to make sure to keep your focus intact, is to give yourself, you know, hit a shot and then if you feel like you've got it, if you feel like, okay, I hit that shot the way I wanted to, go to the next shot, go to a different flag, pull out a different club. That will keep your focus up. But if you're mindlessly going through and just doing the same thing over and over again, then you're not going to have very good focus on the golf course, and you're going to lose focus during your practice session. And I'll kind of finish up with a story. When I was at Grand Cypress, Phil Rogers was there, and I was practicing one day, and I was working on my wedge game, and I put three balls at 30, 40, 50, all the way back to 100 yards at one of our practice holes. And so he pulled up in his cart and he was watching me, and I was hitting these shots up there one after another, and they were all really, you know, around the hole, and I felt really good about them. And after I hit about 10 or 15 shots, I said, what do you think? And he goes, I don't like the way you're practicing. And I was like, what are you talking about? I said, all my balls are right up there by the hole. He said, you hit the same shot every time. He goes, in this situation, you should hit a low one. Then you should hit a medium, and then hit a high one. And then when you go back to 40 yards, hit a low one, hit a medium, hit a high one. It keeps your focus, and that's the kind of stuff that will translate on the golf course, because if you're doing it the same way every time, you're defeating the purpose of playing this game. You've got to learn how to hit different shots. And so by practicing different trajectories, that's going to make you a much sharper player on the golf course.
Well said. And I think just to add real quick on to the maintaining focus discussion is, you know, these are things by creating a sound practice routine is going to help you to be able to do that. And you might even want to break your sessions into what I refer to as manageable time blocks, meaning, you know, if you're working on the range, let's say for an hour, don't just do the same thing for an hour. Break it up into time blocks. So maybe I'm going to spend 15 minutes in this particular area of a part of my game that's really struggling. Maybe I'm going to spend 20 minutes over here, 10 minutes over here, whatever it is. You need to break it down and you need to stick with that. And then you might also want to use some mental cues to help you stay engaged. So for example, if you find yourself sort of wandering and drifting and you're kind of all over the place, maybe one of the things that you can say to yourself, especially if you're suddenly getting to a point where you're rushing your golf swing, maybe think and say the word to yourself internally, smooth. You know, I want to think smooth. So I'm sort of tampering down my golf swing a little bit, or slow, you know, whatever the case is, to sort of bring yourself back down to earth. Because a lot of times people get in into a practice session and they get rushed or they get out of sync. And sometimes using mental cues can help bring you back down. So there's just some thoughts. Clint, no matter what we do, whether it's practice or otherwise, but particularly in practice, what we're talking about today, this one I think is definitely something that we have to do, and that is evaluating your practice performance. So we've done all of the different things that you guys have been talking about here, but there comes a point in time where you have to sort of take a step back and really evaluate the performance. Give us some thoughts here.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, we look at the thing where we practice, we perform, we analyze. Practice, perform, analyze. And so if you look at that in the practice realm, I think you have to go back to what you were talking, and John was talking about as far as practice goals. But you have to have those before you can evaluate. You know, if you don't, you basically can evaluate, did I waste my time or didn't I? But you can evaluate based on your goals. You know, if you're going out and you're working on, you know, your instructor wants you to have a little bit better footwork. And so were you successful and stayed focused on the purpose you were there? And if you can answer that in a yes, I think you can, you can evaluate your session as being successful. If you attach ball results, you may consider that it was a failure, because although I'm working on a particular portion of my body movement through the swing, it may not produce really what you'd consider great results as far as what the ball flight was in direction and distance. But you could have achieved improving that particular portion of your golf swing based on that. So I think if you get into talking about evaluating your practice, and that goes back to the root issue of purpose. What were you there to try to accomplish, and did you accomplish it? And that's the real key element in being able to evaluate whether I use a little thing called ROTE, return on time and effort. You know, did I get a return for my time and effort in this practice session based on my purpose or goals that I went there to do? And if you can answer, yes, I got good return on my time and effort, then you feel good about it. Then you can go on to the next level or next purpose or next goal in your improvement level. But until you can answer that return on time and effort in a positive, either you need to reevaluate your goals, what you're doing, or certainly reevaluate your focus on whether you actually went there with the goals and stayed attached to them. You know, we all wander when we're on the range. There's other people there. We're maybe talking to a buddy. You know, we have to stay focused. That's why I really like the fact that if I'm practicing, I try to get off in the corner of the range someplace, you know, where I can kind of be selfish a little bit, you know, to hit balls and not have to carry on a conversation with somebody that may break up my focus or change my purpose for being there. So I think if you're going to evaluate, kind of long story short here, if you're going to have that evaluation level, you have to have the purpose, you have to have the focus, and then you can make a legitimate evaluation on whether your practice session was well spent or not.
Well said, Clint. You're exactly right. I think, you know, you have to, anything that you do in life, no matter what it is, whether it's your job, whether it's your golf game, whether it's your relationships, you get out of it what you put into it. And if you want to become a better golfer, then you have to put something into it. And that means working on areas of your game that need to be worked on and putting that effort in. And this comes to some common practice mistakes. One we've kind of really touched on earlier on. I'm just going to sort of skip through this one, and then, John, I'll give you one that I want you to focus on a little bit more, and then Clint. But the first one, obviously, is practicing without a plan. We've touched on this. One of the most common practice mistakes is practicing without a clear plan. So this can certainly lead to unfocused sessions, which we talked about, where time is not used efficiently and improvement is slow. Caused a lot of frustration for everyday golfers because they don't put that effort in. They don't stay focused. They don't really put and get a game plan. Or when they do get a game plan put together by their coach, they don't follow it. So if you practice without a plan, then as you pointed out just now, Clint, you find them yourself sort of aimlessly hitting balls without a specific purpose, which is unlikely to lead to a meaningful progress. So this is something, a mistake you want to avoid. John, on the other side of the coin, we'd certainly need to be diligent in getting the practice, but there's also a danger in this one, and that is over-practicing. Talk about that a little bit, because that can be just as bad for you as not practicing at all or not enough. Your thoughts?
Well, I can attest to the over-practicing because I have spent, I'm on the driving range a lot. I'm teaching a lot. I don't get to get out on the golf course as much as I used to. And so I tend to hit a lot of balls on the range, maybe between lessons, or if I've got, 30 minutes or whatever, and I'll go and hit the ball, and I'll maybe get in a rhythm and hit a lot of really good shots. And I'll think to myself, all right, I feel good about my game. I feel like, my game's there. And then, lo and behold, a couple of days later, I get out on the golf course, and I was hitting great on the driving range. I'm not able to replicate it on the course. If you're always practicing on the driving range and you're always trying to groove the quote-unquote perfect swing, you will never become a great player. You must play the game. You must play it, as much as possible, and it needs to be an equal balance. I like to see if you have 6 days in the week to focus on golf and play golf, and a lot of people out there do not have that much time, but let's just use that as an example. Then I think it would be ideal to play golf 3 days and practice 3 days. If you have 4 days, practice two, play two. If you only have 2 days, play one, practice one. So, that's the way that I would focus on. If you only have 1 day, if Saturday is the only day that you're going to have to play golf, then you're going to have to put your practice time before you play and after you play. You're going to have to do both and try to fit them into that 1 day. But people, I see it all the time where people just stand out there and they think that, well, Ben Hogan stood out there and hit balls all day long. Well, Ben Hogan was a very unique person. The average person can't do what Ben Hogan did. The average person doesn't have the time or the talent to do what Ben Hogan did. So I think that you learn more by playing about your game because you have – you have immediate feedback, and the golf course will not lie to you. The driving range may lie to you, but the golf course won't lie to you. The driving range is very forgiving. The golf course is not very forgiving. And so being able to go out on the golf course, and then when you're done with your round, like I played yesterday, the first thing that I did when I got done with my round is I looked at my stats, and I said, okay, here's what I did well. Here's what I didn't do well. And I'm going to go work on what I didn't do well. And so the only way that I can truly get that and get that evaluation, and kind of what Clint was just talking about, the return on your time, return on your investment, return on your experience on the golf course, the only way that you can truly understand where your game is by playing the game. The driving range can lead you to a false sense of security, and you want to be able to obviously improve. So we want to see people playing just as much as we want to see them practicing.
Well said. And just one other quick point, and then Clint, I've got something for you that I want you to address. The other thing that, John, that I don't think you did mention, and that is, with over-practicing, and obviously I'm not talking a little bit, I'm talking excessive practice, is, and especially for some of our more senior golfers, you run the risk of injury. And also muscle strains, things like that. I mean, how many times have we seen somebody who's practiced so much and then they get out there to play maybe the next day and they're so stiff and sore that they're not making a fluid swing? So, you have to, and especially as we get older, you don't recover. Your body doesn't recover as quickly. So you get burnt out, if you will, mentally, but also physically, you're overdoing it. So you need to find that sort of sweet spot of practice that you're getting the results that you want, you're attacking the areas that you need to, but not so much that you're running the risk of injury or mental sort of fatigue by working on things too much to the point where you're not really enjoying yourself. Clint, this is an area that, again, there's been some sort of alluding to, but maybe you can touch on a little bit more. You know, we've been out, we're practicing, and a lot of people, for some reason, maybe because it's not sexy to practice these things, I don't know, but they ignore the weak areas. They don't tend to focus on the weak areas as much as they should. So I think to avoid that, they need to make a conscious effort to first identify and then address the weaknesses. Touch on that a little bit.
Well, there's no question about that. I think if you, and by the way, I'm kind of stiff and sore regardless every time I play nowadays.
Right, me too.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. But the point, I guess the point you're trying to make is, and I, this may be kind of harsh, but most people that we work with really, you know, don't quite know what it takes to get better. Yeah, they think they want to get better. And we've seen it, Don, you have too, and you know, that we've got people take lessons from us, and the only time, you know, that they're supposed to think that lesson time is what's going to help them get better. They don't do a whole lot of work in between. So they don't really want to be required to do what it takes to improve. Well, one of the first requirements in your question is that, well, I want to work on my trouble areas. Well, the first thing you have to do is be required to determine what those are and be realistic with yourself that, hey, I need to work on my 60-yard pitch shots or whatever the data shows. And in today's world, we've got all kind of apps people can gather this data without doing a whole lot of pencil work. So if they're really serious and want to do what is required to improve their score, not necessarily improve their ball striking or whatever, but improve their score, then they need to be able to determine what those areas are. We've talked about that many times. So unless they're going to do that front work, determining where their true trouble areas are, and I don't think you can determine that on 118 holes of golf. I think it's a series of rounds that begin to show a pattern. You know, you can go out and have a bad day, or you can go out and have a really good day. But if you set a grouping in order to see a long-term plan or a long-term path or trending, then you can begin to zero in on those areas. I think maybe some people, you know, we have panic practice that comes on. You know, I went out and I've three-putted four times, five times a day, so I'm going to panic practice now. I'm going to go out there and figure this out. And they may have just been having a bad day. It may not be a real trouble area, but right there at that particular moment, it is the trouble area. But we may be wasting our time ignoring where the trend is in order to fix what was maybe just a bad day. So I really think that the people that really want to put the required time in and effort need to begin to gather that data over a period of maybe weeks or months to determine a trend. Not to say you can't work on it intermediately as you're developing these trends, but I think that's an important thing to understand. It's not a knee-jerk type of reaction to your trouble area. You want to really truly understand that this is where I can improve my game from and dedicate the time and effort in those areas and then move on. And then you start a new trend. We've all got things we need to work on. But I'm not working on the same things now that I did 6 months ago. It's all about how things are trending, patterns look like, and the only way you determine those is a grouping of data, not just one specific round of golf.
Yeah, and that's an excellent point as well, Clint, because, again, you know, things change. You know, what areas you might have been struggling with right now may not be the same things that you're going to struggle with. And we all struggle. I don't care who you are, or how much you play. Every golfer at every level has moments when they struggle with their game. And the difference is at the higher level, they're able to identify those struggles easier, quickly, and they know how to adapt and work on those things and focus on those areas much better than the amateur golfer. And obviously they have a lot more time to work on these things. That's their profession. So we get that. But there's no reason that we can't do our part, and I'm referring to the average golfer out there, to try to make the experience better. Obviously, we want to go out and have fun. That's the first and foremost, is golf is meant to be fun. So we're not suggesting that you have to practice all the time, but you need to engage some sort of, practice regimen to be able to see improvements, or at least if you want to see improvements. And this falls into this category, John, and that is, what is the role of the golf coach in practice? So a couple of things I identified in this particular chapter is, first, number one, guiding practice sessions. Maybe you can touch on that a little bit. And then providing feedback and corrections.
Well, the guiding part of the coach as the coach is very important, and I think it's also important for the coaches out there that who might be listening, is that you change it up. That you're not just doing the same thing in every single lesson. You know, I have some really good junior players that I work with, and they'll take lessons in pairs. And so I try to have some little competitions with them. I try to take them out on the golf course and, like Clint says, you know, put them in a situation, say, all right, how are we going to, you know, I put them in a situation where they can't hit it on the green. Okay, how are we going to turn this bad shot into and get a bogey out of this, for example, you know, or maybe give ourselves a chance to have a long par putt or whatever. So that they're having to, be in these situations that are more realistic what they're going to get on the golf course. And then also, you know, structured practice could be like I get a ladies clinic, and maybe I've got a lot of ladies that I'm working with that have never, we have a very large ladies clinic here at the Medallion Club. And, you know, in one day we'll have, you know, almost 40 ladies show up for this. And most of them are new players. And so it's important for me to guide them through the fundamentals and just how to hold the club and ball position and some of the rules and things like that. You know, you can't forget about all those etiquettes and the things about, you know, where to show up at the golf course and tee times and all that information is important in a PGA professional as well. And then the second part was, can you remind me again what the second part you were asking about? Ted.
Sure. And that was providing feedback and corrections.
Feedback.
So obviously you want feedback and corrections.
That's correct. And so one of the things that I like to do with my students is do like an end of the year evaluation with them. And I'll sit down with them and I'll tell them, you know, going into this last lesson of the year, you know, we're going to spend about 15 to 20 minutes talking about what you need to work on to become better. You know, because up here in Ohio, I mean, you're going from, you know, the summer season in the fall, and then all of a sudden winter hits, and unless you're going to an indoor facility, your golf season's over. It's not like as advantageous as, you know, teaching maybe in the Carolinas or South, where you can play golf more year round. And so feedback is very important with the students. I try to give feedback with all of my lessons. I do a video at the end of all of my lessons, and I email it to my students, and that's part of their lesson as well. And in that, I give about a 3 to 4 minute feedback on what they need to work on. So they've got it away from the lesson tee, they've got it away from the golf course, where they can sit at home and watch the video and just digest it. They can't pick up a club and hit balls. They've just got to be there and listen to it. So feedback is very important as well. So Those are ways that I do it, and you know, I think that I've had a lot of success. And the feedback that I've gotten from my students is they love that. They love the fact that I'm giving them that information, you know, whether it's at the end of the season or at the end of the lesson.
Yeah, and it's so important, John. I think as a coach, you know, our role is not just to say, okay, here's what you need to do, and here's what you're doing wrong. You know, we have to be more specific sometimes, because a lot of people don't always get it. You know, they nod their head in agreement, but they're not really always understanding sometimes what's being said. And that's why it's very important as a golf coach that whatever feedback and or correction or even redirection that we may give them has to be explained as simply as possible so that everybody understands. And that doesn't mean that you talk down. That's not meaning to talk down at somebody or to assume that they're a dummy and don't understand. But a lot of times we get caught up in the golf jargon or too statistical or what have you, and people don't always, you know, spin rates and all these things. A lot of the average golfer doesn't really understand the ins and outs of a lot of that information, of sometimes the numbers. And I think if we get caught up in that. So it's very important. And Clint, this question for you to follow up on really the role of a coach is also to be a little bit of a cheerleader. You know, it's great to give them all the points and talk to them about things that they need to do and not do, but we also have to be their motivator and also help with ways of encouraging improvement. So maybe you could touch on a few things there, some examples that you've done to really get in there and kind of be that rah-rah cheerleader for them.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt in the fact that a good instructor most likely should always leave their student at the end of a lesson with a number of things. One, the plan, what are you going to do between now and the next time we get together? But also with that is to leave them with a very positive thought pattern of what they've accomplished since you've been working with them. You know, I use video in my putting, chipping over the years, and I keep all those. And what I would do is we're really making some improvement, I would go back and say, look, now here's where we were day one or lesson one, maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, maybe a month ago, and we were working on improving this, right? You'd get them to engage back, yeah, that's what we were working on, and then point out to how they've accomplished what we intended to do in the first lesson. You've got that taken care of now. You know, I always try to get to a point where I can convince my students, hey, what we've been working on is good enough. Now, like John speaking, let's go play. You know, you do recognize the fact that it's a game, and we need to play the game. So you have to get your students into a positive mindset where they feel comfortable that what they've been working on is improving, and now let's relax a little bit on this instructions and practice time, and let's go play a little bit. Let's not have a lesson for a couple of weeks now. Let's go out and play, get us some data, let us understand what we're doing and how it's working on the golf course to where we can truly then say, okay, we need to continue to work on this, or we're going to move on to the next thing that's going to maybe help you become even a better player. You know, just a quick one, that back when I was coaching, they would come in and the kid would have a session and mom and dad would all, well, what do you think? And I said, well, we know he's a pretty good hitter right now, but we're not sure how good a player he is. So we have to find out how good a player they are. And I think that's where the encouragement and the, quote, cheerleading and the rah-rah session will give your students enough confidence and comfortability with going out to play. If they never think that they're getting better, they'll never really go out and relax and play. So I've always used the video, historical data with the lesson to prove, hey, we're getting better. Here's where we started. Here's where we're at now. And now you can feel comfortable to go out and play and enjoy playing the game, and then we'll come back. But most importantly, I want you to feel like that you have improved. Maybe the ball's not doing quite as much as you want it to, but what you're doing as far as movement of body is getting better. So now let's go out and see what kind of return we've got. And I love John's idea. The real return on your time and effort is when you're playing. Have you accomplished anything? Is the playing of the game better than it was when you started this practice routine? And I think you're absolutely correct. You have to leave them with the fact that they're getting better. It's still a process of getting better, but we can go out with a little bit more confidence and a little bit more relaxed attitude. We would go play and enjoy the day.
Yeah, and it's so important, especially with a lot of the junior golfers. I know, right. You know, John and you, Clint, have worked with a lot of juniors over the years. And, you know, for them, they look at you through a lens of, okay, this person is going to be able to help me to get to the goals that I'm seeking. And if it's always a negative or always, well, you know, you did okay, but there has to be some positive reinforcement along the way. Otherwise, they lose focus. And that, unfortunately, is something that a lot of parents need to follow and parody as well, because a lot of parents sometimes are too hard on their juniors and are too demanding of, and expectations are very, very high sometimes with the parents, to the point where the junior golfer just decides, you know what, I'm never going to measure up. I'm never going to be good enough because they're not getting that positive reinforcement. So you have to find a balance.
Right.
You have to certainly point out areas that we can improve on, but you also have to really elevate the areas that we're doing good on right now and give them something to focus on moving forward. So great job. I think we covered a lot of stuff. I know it's a lot, and people might be thinking, well, that's a lot to talk about practice. And believe it or not, there's a lot of things we didn't get into, and there's more in the book. And when that gets officially released, I'm going to give you that. But the book is going to be entitled Mastering Your Golf Practice Routine. That was just some excerpts from Chapter 1. And I think once people have a better understanding of some of the things that you talked about tonight, and that's why I'm releasing this now in sort of little nuggets, is to give people something to think about when they go out and practice next time at the range, that they're not just out there doing what we often see so many times, and that's raking and hitting the ball. So great job tonight. Hour seemed to fly by for some reason. I'm not sure why. Yeah. But, John, if you want to let the folks know how they can reach out to you, and if there's anything special that you'd like to plug or mention, by all means, go ahead, and then Clint.
Yeah, no worries.
Well, again, Ted, thank you for having us on tonight. And, Clint, I really enjoy, as always, first time I've been with you this year, and I always enjoy being on with you. I think you have a lot of great insight, and I always get a lot from it. For the listeners out there, if you want to get in touch with me, I encourage you to go to my website. It's called deckergolf.com, deckergolf.com. Or you can follow me on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. I have videos there, or LinkedIn. My book is Golf is My Life, Glorifying God Through the Game. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Walmart websites, and also on Amazon Audible if you like Audible books. It's available, and I've just completed my second book. It's Fairways to Heaven. It's currently still in the page layout design, which it should be out this summer, and I'm really excited about this. And it's really a culmination of all the Fairways to Heaven articles I've done with Golf Tips Magazine, and I put them together into a book and added some other material, and I added a tribute in the book to Phil Rogers, and there's 18 PGA professionals who I worked with at Grand Cypress who have written testimonials for Phil as well. And if you're interested in having me come in as a public speaker, you can reach out to me again on the website. I can come in if you're for your church or for a golf outing or any kind of charity event that you may have going on at your golf course. I do that as well, and that's something I can do if you're interested. But thanks again, Ted, and as always, a great time on your show.
I appreciate it, John. Thank you very much. Clint, go ahead.
Yeah, sure. Ted and John, as you said, it's always a pleasure being on the show, but especially I think we have some good discussions on the show all the time, but this has been a good one. And I really appreciate, Ted, you bringing up the idea of practice, because we very rarely see people doing it correctly, to be honest with you. So it's a great topic and wonderful discussion. As normal, everybody can reach me if they want to. It's at ClintGoff001 on yahoo.com. That's the simplest and easiest way, and I look forward to hearing from anybody. And I hope the summer goes well for everybody and plays a lot of golf.
I appreciate it, guys. Thank you, as always. John Decker and Clint Wright joining me on the Coach's Corner panel tonight for a great discussion, and I look forward to you guys joining me again on a future one. So thanks, guys. Have a great rest of your week, and enjoy the if you get a chance to watch Valhalla the tournament this weekend, the PGA. I hope you enjoy that. But thanks, guys, for doing a great job, always.
Hey, you're welcome.
Thank you, Dad.
Take care. Good night. Good night.
All right, that was John Decker and Clint Wright, as I mentioned, on the Coach's Corner panel. We're going to take a quick break as we get ready to be joined by our very special guest, Pete Holman, the co-creator of Golf Forever. And here's a message from one of our sponsors, Victory Gear. And they're going to talk about a special offer, but going to talk a little bit about why the carbon fiber inserts are the ticket for you to get.
When it comes to golf, there are two topics that consistently come up, more distance and more energy. But hey, what if you could achieve both? Introducing Victory's carbon fiber insoles, the revolutionary performance insoles designed specifically to help golfers hit longer. Using patented carbon fiber technology, VKs do more than support your feet. Many golfers see a 1 to 2 mile per hour increase in club head speed, just by adding victory insoles to their shoes. So if you want to up your game and feel better after a long day on the course, choose Victory's carbon fiber insoles. Visit victory.com, that's VKTRY.com, and use code GT20 for 20% off today. This offer is exclusive for listeners of this podcast. Again, visit victory.com and use code GT20 for 20% off. Order today to start feeling the difference on your next round.
The following ad is sponsored by Golf Tips Magazine.
Are you tired of being short off the tee? And what about those three putts? Forget about it. It's time you got serious about your game. Golf Tips, the most in-depth magazine in the industry. For over 30 years, Golf Tips has delivered expert content such as the latest golf instruction from America's top pros, simple-to-follow practice and game improvement drills, fitness and mental game tips, equipment, training aids, accessory and apparel reviews, golf destinations and travel tips for every budget, and so much more. Don't miss a single issue. Go to golftipsmag.com and subscribe today.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to Golf Talk Live. I'm your host, Ted Oderico, and we had a great discussion this evening on Coach's Corner, and I'm looking forward to speaking with my special guest of the evening. I'm just waiting for him to come on board, but in the meantime, I'm going to just tell you a little bit about him just to get things going, and then I'll bring him on once he is available. My guest, as I mentioned, is Pete Holman. He's the co-creator of Golf Forever. He's a physical therapist, a certified strength and conditioning specialist, international presenter, author, fitness product inventor, and former U.S. national taekwondo champion who currently resides in Colorado. Some of his clients include Fortune 500 business owners as well as numerous Hollywood stars. His accreditation as a certified strength and conditioning specialist through the NSCA has enabled Pete to work with professional athletes and strength coaches from a variety of high-level sports, including the MLB, NFL, NBA, and others. And he's obviously worked with a lot of magazines and fitness journals and has appeared on national TV shows such as The Doctors and The Steve Harvey Show. So please welcome my very special guest this evening, Pete Holman. Good evening, Pete. Welcome.
Fantastic. I'm here. I made it.
You're here. You're here. That's right. Welcome. I did the intro first just to get that out of the way and wanted to do that before you actually came on, so you're not having to sit and listen to all of that before before we get into tonight's conversation. So you've got quite the go ahead, sorry.
I just was saying you don't want me blushing, huh, on air?
Right. Right, exactly.
Going back, and
No. You don't need. You got. Listen, that was only half of it. There's another half that I could have gone through as well, but I've only got you for about an hour, so I wanted to get to some questions. But Pete, first off, thank you very much. Yeah, thank you very much for coming on tonight, and I'm looking forward to our discussion. And as I mentioned in the beginning, you're the a co-creator for Golf Forever, and I actually had Jeremy on a little over a month ago talking a little bit about Golf Forever as well, sort of from his side of things. And I'm glad that you're able to come back, and there's some specific things that we're going to dial into tonight. But I want to just start right out from the gate. Talk a little bit about, because obviously you're not a professional golfer, but you obviously have helped not only athletes and others in at a very high level in other sports, but now you're doing that in the golf arena. What is it about golf that you enjoy to the point that you wanted to get involved, not specifically with Golf Forever, but obviously to help this particular field? And we'll talk a little bit about that in more detail as we go along. But what was it about golf that appealed to you?
Well, to be honest, the challenge. I'm an ex-elite level athlete. I competed on the U.S. national taekwondo team. I traveled the world competing at the highest level. And what happens when you do that, and growing up in Colorado trying to be a mogul ski racer, your body starts to break down. And so later, I had this bug. I said, I still want to be competitive and do something very challenging. And I said, I'll pick up golf. You know, I'm a great athlete. It'll be no problem. Well, as we all know how that goes, I was humbled so much to the point where I was like, what is with this sport? And I just kind of got instantly hooked. I said to myself, I'm going to crack the code here. And of course I haven't come close to cracking the code because it's a hard code to crack. But what I will say is that my motor control is something that's not often talked about. So in the weight room, you know, I'm a strength coach, I'm a physical therapist. We always talk about flexibility and core strength and balance and all these things, but the fine motor control of all the smaller muscles in your shoulders,
yep,
in your mid back, in your low back, in your hips, in your the intrinsic muscles in your feet. You know, I heard an ad for Footbed. You know, there's the feet are extremely important. I mean, try to swing a golf club on one foot and tell me how that works out. So all these motor control issues are something very unique to golf and unique to high-level sports, and I found that extremely challenging. And so, you know, I'm deep into training for golf and also the neurology that's involved in fine motor control.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that because you're exactly right, by the way, because, you know, and I'm glad that you got humbled. You know, a lot of people, you know, I gotta stick up for golf because there's a lot of people that have come into golf and from the get-go that kind of say, it's not really that hard. It's not that challenging. I mean, come on, it's not a physical sport like football or hockey or, you know, something along that line. And they get up in the golf course, and I'm talking some pretty high-level athletes, and they get out there, and it's amazing that, wow, I didn't realize it was this challenging, or, you know, I'm still trying to, you know, break 100 or 90 or whatever the case is. So, I mean, it doesn't matter what kind of shape you're in. It's a challenging game. And I think that's what really, especially for men, I'm not trying to throw the ladies under the bus, but for men, we're very highly competitive, you know, between one another. And I think golf really hits that sweet spot, pun intended. But you're exactly right when you talk about really, I refer to them as sort of the stabilizing muscles. Everybody focuses on the big muscles and, yeah, got to build that strength and, you know, got to generate the speed with the core and all that. But, you know, if you're not very well balanced on your 2 feet, which is obviously what's anchored to the ground, sometimes that throws your swing off a little bit. So my first question for you is this. Talk about, I mean, you kind of answered it, but how important is golf fitness for the average? Let's get away from the pros for a second. For the average golfer, and what can they do to help both their playing ability and overall health? How is this going to help them by getting into better shape? And what kinds of things do they really need to focus on?
Well, I always like to start with a simple example. So every golf pro that I've ever talked to talks about the turn. You know, what's your backswing look like? How wide can you get with your turn? And so there's something about this turn that is critical for golf. And where the turn comes from, it comes through the kinetic chain, but two major sticking points that I've found with all of my clients. Now, keep in mind, I came up in Aspen. I was working with, you know, uber wealthy people that had access to everything, and they traveled a lot, and they were all in their 50s, 60s, 70s. And what happens as we age, and younger golfers too, but specifically when you age, you get tight and stiff in your hips and your mid-back. So your hips and your thoracic spine, and if you've listened to any fitness, you know, golf guys talk or gals, they talk about the hips and the thoracic spine. But I want to dive into this a little bit because what happens, you go to your pro, and the pro says, okay, we got to fix your swing. And they're basically trying to cram a square peg into a round hole. If you don't have the ability to turn in your hips, which is internal and external rotation of the hips, we could even go down to the feet, but I don't want to get in the weeds here. And your thoracic spine, the ability to rotate through your thoracic spine, which is kind of your mid-back. So, you know, your neck is your cervical spine. Then it's the thoracic spine. There's 12 thoracic vertebrae. And then it's the lumbar spine. And hopefully you don't know what the lumbar spine is because it might mean that you've had a lumbar spine injury and you're well aware of what the lumbar spine is. That's where we don't want to get the turn from because the lumbar spine is pretty sensitive to rotational forces at high speeds. And, you know, there's discs in there and there's facet joints and there's ligaments and there's muscles surrounding there. So we want to get the turn from the hips and the thoracic spine. Well, listen, if you can't get the turn, if you don't have the mobility, if you don't have the flexibility, it doesn't matter what the pro tells you to do, what correction to make, you don't mechanically have that range of motion. So step number one, if you want to play better golf and do it pain-free, is to work on your flexibility. That's one of our foundational pillars in the app. Now, we also talk about core strength because, you know, obviously you've got to have,
sure.
I call it bulletproofing the core. You know, you want to kind of have a strong central foundation where you can take a lot of repetitive loading cycles over and over and over again, which is the golf swing, by the way, by one side of the body. And we'll talk about that later, asymmetrical loading. So you want to have a strong core, and that stabilizes everything. Also, it connects the upper body to the lower body. So if you don't have that connection, you just don't have any power off the tee. So you want flexibility or mobility, whatever you want to call it. You want core strength and then balance. And this is a little bit more into some of the neurology that I alluded to earlier. You know, balance is an interesting athletic character trait. But if you look, you know, the NBA playoffs are on right now. And I love watching – I love all sports, by the way. I'm geeked out on mm-hmm. sports. So I watch golf. I watch basketball. Right. The NHL playoffs are on right now. Like, football's over. But if you watch basketball, every time an athlete goes to take a shot or goes to drive the lane, if they have balance at the delivery point where they let the shot go, they have a very high probability of making the shot. As soon as they're off balance, the shots go awry. And you see it every night. Somebody gets bumped in the lane and they're off balance. Now, the truly great players, you know, Jamal Murray is one of the, you know, I'm a Colorado guy, so I got to represent the Nuggets. Jamal Murray is one of those guys. He gets knocked off balance. He still somehow rights himself in midair and hits the shot. So you think, well, golf, you don't really need balance. You're just sitting there, you know, off a tee box. Well, you're not. I mean, I hearken back to that Jordan Spieth shot at the Ryder's Cup. And please tell me you know what shot I'm talking about, because he's kind of dangling precariously on this cliff. And 1 foot's elevated, 1 foot's down by Lake Michigan. He's trying to chop through, you know, 12 inches of rough, if not more, on this extreme angle. And he hits this sky shot that it's one of the most beautiful shots I've ever seen in golf because of the difficulty. But, you know, now that's an extreme example, but tell me you've never been in the rough or in a sand trap and 1 foot's up, 1 foot's down, and you're kind of precariously dangling and trying to hit a shot. You got to work on your balance. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to hit these difficult shots.
Yeah, and that's a great – you raise some fantastic points. And we've all, unfortunately, been in a similar scenario at some level. And you're right. Most people don't know how to handle that. And you raise a really interesting point that I want to go back to. And, you know, you talk about golf coaches. And just sort of an FYI, I have a lot of – in addition to, obviously, regular listeners, I have a lot of coaches – other, you know, fellow teaching professional, I'm a teaching professional, that listen to the show. So it's important that they understand. And I want to ask you a question about them, because some of them I know go out and will get a fitness certification for golf, and some of them will add that to their repertoire. But I think it's important, which heartens to something that you were talking about a few moments ago, and that is it's great to work and help try to fix the player's swing. But if they're having mobility issues or having physical issues, you can make all the adjustments you want to their golf swing. If they don't have good balance and they don't have good, you know, core structure, what have you, it's all you're doing really is putting a Band-Aid. So would you suggest to my fellow pros that if they don't have the skill themselves, if they haven't gotten the proper certifications, that they work hand in hand with a particularly one that specializes in golf, but a certified fitness trainer, that they can then work with their clients and get involved in helping them isolate some of the issues that they may be having before they really start making a lot of swing changes? What are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. I mean, you're talking about a team approach, and that's usually the best solution to anything because you have specialists in different areas. One thing that's great about golf pros and coaches is they really do understand biomechanics of the body. They understand rotational torque and how to generate power. They understand the kinetic chain and how to integrate the chain. They understand whip motion, and they've got a lot of the physics and understanding of those physical laws and mechanical laws down, but they don't necessarily know how to implement changes in the human body. And so when you start talking about flexibility and mobility, well, what exercises are good for that? It's not swinging a club. I mean, that's not how you warm up for golf. I mean, if you went to the PGA, if you were at the Valhalla this morning and you were at the trailers and you saw these guys warming up, and they're not swinging clubs. They're in, they're using the Golf Forever swing trainer. They're using dumbbells. They're using elastic bands. They're using wobble boards. They're standing on one leg with the other leg up behind them and twisting and rotating. They're locking in all those physical systems. So, you know, you can farm out and have a great personal trainer or physical therapist that can help assist with the exercise. Or you could take the Golf Forever certification. You know, we've just launched a Golf Forever certification for this specific thing for golf pros. And what it does is typically certifications for golf pros, they dive deep. And all of a sudden what happens is the pro gets a little overwhelmed because, you know, they're out of their lane. And you're diving into biomechanics and anatomy and kinesiology and things that are just almost over the top for a golf pro that doesn't know the human body. So what we've done is distilled this all down into digestible bite-sized chunks that you can, you know, the basics of flexibility and mobility and what type of exercises to do, the basics of core strength, why it's important, how to get your client set up for success with some core strength exercises and balance. And then the challenge is, and this is what I think the Golf Forever app does really well, is we put everything together in a program. So for the golf, it's called the Coaches Connect app. So it's actually, if you're a certified pro and you get the Golf Forever app, you actually have an exclusive part of the app, access to an exclusive part of the app. And it's only for golf pros and golf coaches. And so we talk a little more granular about golf, a little more technical, and we send let's say you're having somebody, for instance, to use the challenge of a turn in golf and somebody with stiff hips. Well, we will send you quick lesson start drills before your lesson starts, one or two exercises. It doesn't even take 3 to 5 minutes. It doesn't interrupt the lesson or the flow of the lesson, but it'll open up the hips so that your client, your student will have a bigger turn. And now all of a sudden you kind of look like a rock star because you fixed a huge component of their swing fault by just warming up their hips. And so I, you know, definitely work with a personal trainer, physical therapist. But I mean, if I was a pro, I would want to know some of these tips myself for my own game, for sure. Clients that come in, you know, they come racing in rush hour traffic. They're late for their lesson. And you know, the last thing you want to do is start them swinging aggressively. You've got to do something very quick to just get their system switched on, work on a little bit of mobility, a little bit of core strength, a little bit of balance. And that's what's so great about Golf Forever and the swing trainer, which we haven't really talked too much about, but that's kind of my baby. It's this asymmetrical bar that has a resistance cord on one side, and you move it around almost like it was a golf club, but it's got a cord on one side connected to an anchor point. And now you kill three birds with one stone. You get dynamic mobility, which is increasing your turn. You get core activation of the muscles so that you're going to have more power off the tee, and you're going to protect your low back. And because it's connected to one side, as you move it around, it's going to challenge your balance. So with one or two quick moves, you're just kind of tuning everything up. And I liken the human body to a Formula One race car. You know, some of us are more Formula One than others, but the concept is the same. You know, you don't hop in a Formula One car and redline the thing at 10,000, 12,000 RPMs and think it's going to perform well. You know, you turn it on, you let it idle, you get all the fluid going through the chassis and the cylinder walls, and you adjust the injectors and you put some air in the tires. You tune the thing up, and then the race car driver gets in there and starts ripping around the course. Well, you know, think about Golf Forever or a coach, a pro, as kind of like a body mechanic. You got to tune the body up just a little bit before you start ripping around the course.
Yeah, and again, another great point, and I'm going to get into the Golf Forever's swing trainer. I was just wanted to get a couple of points out before we got into that because I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about some of the things that obviously are important to becoming a better player. And it's not just all about how you're swinging the golf club. There's other components as well. And, you know, what I like the fact of what you just said is, you know, a lot of times, especially this day and age, everybody's time restraints are much more, you know, involved now. So a lot of times, you're right, students might get there instead of normally 15 or so, you know, minutes before the lesson where they can warm up. Sometimes they're hopping out of their car, they're running across the parking lot, and then, you know, right away, you know, because we're trying to keep on track, you know, they're in swinging, you know, at full speed, and they're not really have had a chance to warm up, or their warm up is a couple of practice swings, and okay, you know, I'm ready to go.
Right.
You decided to partner with Golf Forever just a few years ago, and you are the co-inventor of really the world's first two-in-one golf training aid, the swing trainer, which you've been talking about. Why, first off, why did you decide to partner with them? And you've obviously described the product a little bit, and we're going to send them to the website later and let them have a better look at things. But what was sort of the thought process in getting involved with that? And what was it, what sort of makes the swing trainer uniquely different from maybe a lot of other things that we see on the market?
Yeah, so I met Jeremy James, who's a chiropractor in Aspen, and we actually go way back. Never worked together, and then at one point he reached out to me and said, hey, would you like to do some content for this new app and company app called Golf Forever? And I said, you know, I'm a novice golfer. I'm just getting into golf. But, you know, what's interesting is strength and conditioning, which is my background in physical therapy, it's kind of agnostic, right? I've worked with Major League Baseball players, professional ski racers, surfers, hockey players. It doesn't mixed martial artists. It doesn't matter if I have the technical skill to perform in the sport. What matters is, do I have the technical knowledge base and experience to bring out the best in each individual athlete? And of course, you have to understand the sport. But because I'm a physical therapist, I'm an expert in biomechanics. So that's kind of my background. And so I told Jeremy asked me to deliver some content for Golf Forever. And I said, you know, I the only way I'd do it is if I could talk to the consumers like they're athletes. Like, you know, I want to work on your athleticism, because I truly believe if you are a better athlete, by the way, there's a lot of range of athletes. I understand some of you are more athletic than others, but as right. Bill Bowerman, the co-founder of Nike, once said, if you have a body, you are an athlete. So I consider everybody athletes, and there's just varying degrees. So if I make you a better athlete, inherently you will become a better golfer or better pickleball player or better skier, because you're going to have flexibility. You're going to have core strength. You're going to have balance. You're going to have agility. You're going to have neuromuscular control, and all that stuff leads to fluidity. And once you start getting into flow, you know, we haven't talked about flow state, but that's a whole nother level of athleticism. You start rehearsing movement patterns and becoming more athletic. And that's when your golf pro says, you know what, I'd like to do this. I'd like to change your swing just a little bit. I want to make a micro adjustment. And most people lose their minds and they say, oh, I can't change anything. It's too much. I don't understand. I can't see myself in three-dimensional space. The better athlete you are, or the more athletic you are, you can make those micro adjustments because you've done it in the gym. You've done it on the Golf Forever app. It's doing the traditional exercise movement patterns, squatting and lunging and pushing and pulling and hinging, all that stuff's great. But at some point, you have to challenge your neurology, and you have to do it in three-dimensional space with movement and dynamic exercises. And that kind of dovetails into, you asked about the swing trainer, what makes it unique? That's what makes it unique, is you're controlling this bar that's connected to a resistance cord in three-dimensional space. It's like wrestling in an alligator. I mean, it's not that hard, but the point is, if you're not focused, if you don't kind of coil your energy into the ground and root yourself into the earth, you know, which helps with your address position, right? They say kind of be connected to the ground, power from the ground up, ground reaction forces. This is talk that all pros understand. When you have this resistance going through your body from one side, it forces you to root yourself. Well, that helps with your balance. It forces you to kind of hinge at your hips and activate your core. That helps with your core strength and your power and your back health. It forces you to move through ranges of motion that challenge your not just flexibility, but kind of strength at the end range of the movement pattern. So, you know, I had a pro once say, okay, hold your backswing. And I tried to hold it for like 3 seconds, and I started shaking. And he said, "Why are you shaking?" I said, "Clearly, I need to work on more mobility in this backswing."
Right.
And this was several years ago. But that's
right.
You know, in my mind, I said, "This is an important component. Golfers need to be able to hold positions for a period of time before they initiate the movement pattern. And if you don't have that strength at the end range, you haven't rehearsed that, you haven't practiced it, you're not going to be able to do it on the course." So the swing trainer does this in spades. And of course, we have an app that takes you soup to nuts through, you know, an assessment. We look at flexibility, strength, balance. It gives you a personalized program that it gets progressively harder over time, and it sends you daily workouts. And some of them, you know, you could use as a warm-up before you hit range balls, and some you could use on your off days. It's like, no, this is a serious workout. You know, it's you know, kind of broken into two sections, a fundamental warm-up, which is just great exercises for everybody to kind of loosen up and get ready. And then there's a rotational power workout. The people that really want to improve their games, you know, you got to work on power at some point, right? If you never move with speed and acceleration, you can't expect yourself to do it when you pull out the driver. So, you know, and it's all progressive over time. The one thing that I do want to note is that there's a lot of tools out there, swing training aids, and I think they're all great. There's something for everybody, right? But one thing that makes ours unique is that you work on both sides of the body. So as a physical therapist, one of the first things I look at when a patient comes in, I look at their muscle strength and their muscle length, you know, strength and length, right? And which is basically strength and flexibility. If there's asymmetries from the left side of the body to the right side of the body, it is a red flag. And I jot that down in my notes and I say, ooh, we got to work on this left hamstring, or this right hip is extremely tight, or gosh, I noticed they have really strong legs, but the core is extremely weak. These are red flags. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that the swing trainer does is once you perform an exercise from one side of the body or kind of one angle, you have to turn around and do your non-dominant side. So if you're a right-sided golfer, you have to turn around and do the same movement pattern from the left side. And this does a tremendous job of balancing out the body and making you stronger globally. And also it really helps mitigate the risk of injury, because that's the last thing you want, is to lose a disc or blow out a facet joint, you know, on your first round on vacation. And for the next 6-8 weeks, you're spending all your money in my clinic at, you know, the physical therapy clinic, trying to get right. Why not do a little bit of work 2-3 times a week? It's not that hard, and kind of stay on top of it. And then you can just play golf pain-free forever.
You know, you actually jumped ahead, because that was going to be my next question I had for you was, you know, because we see a lot of, again, I'm a left-handed person, but I golf right-handed. That's just how I was raised, when my father taught me this game
really?
Many moons ago. Yes. So yeah, so I don't play left-handed. But what I noticed with a lot of students who you know, play one way or the other, it doesn't matter. I mean, we're seeing more left-handers play now. But what I noticed is they have a very dominant side, because they're swinging one way. And I like, and you touched on it beautifully, I like the fact that you're really forcing people to, you know, if they're swinging right-handed, to now go and do these same movements the other way, because you need to have balance. And I'm sure – and you can certainly attest to this, that this is probably a lot of the problem with many golfers, especially some of our older golfers, is they have that imbalance, because they're used to swinging one way with their golf club, and they don't have the same ability or strength the other way. So it creates an imbalance, and they compensate for that by making unusual movements to, you know, compensate for a weak area. Is that something that you guys early on, when you were sort of putting all this together, and is that something that you wanted to make sure that when we come out with this, the swing trainer and also the app, you know, to reinforce the different movements, you wanted to make sure that you were creating a well-rounded player, as opposed to just sort of, hey, let's build the swing. And I want to touch on one thing before you answer that. When you talked about the other trainers, there's a lot of swing trainers out there, but what I do notice, which you touched on very early on, is many of them are stimulating swinging a golf club. In other words, you know, they might stick a ball on the end. I'm not picking on anybody, but they might stick a ball on the end or
right.
a weight of some kind, and you're basically just swinging the same as you would if you picked up a couple of golf clubs. So it's really not accomplishing what it is that we're talking about here tonight. First and foremost, is that correct?
Well,
and then I want you to touch
yeah.
on a little bit. Go ahead.
Yeah. And so two things. First of all, I want to, you know, I'm an entrepreneur and I understand sales and marketing. So I'm not, we're not bashing any other products or
no.
You know, exercise kind of systems. But what you'll notice is people will gravitate towards what they're good at, and they'll gravitate towards what looks most like their sport. But I want everybody that's listening to think about something for a second. So Tom Brady just retired, right? And he's arguably
yep.
the greatest quarterback of all time. So he
mm-hmm.
trains about an hour and a half, 2 hours a day during the season, and I'm sure he's probably still doing the same thing because he's Tom Brady. So do you think for an hour and a half that he's simulating a throwing motion with his right hand in the gym with his strength coach?
No.
The answer is no. He's working on balance drills. He's working on leg strength. He's working on hip mobility. He's working on core strength. He's working on footwork and agility. He's working on metabolic conditioning and building a capacity to play four quarters of a high-level game. And yes, he probably does do some strength exercises for his shoulder, and some of them might even be in the position of an overhead athlete, but that's not the focus of his program. Similarly,
right.
Golf Forever, we recognize that you love to swing things, and the swing trajectory is important to understand and have the balance there, but there is a lot of other ways to build strength and flexibility and balance and fluidity in the body. And, you know, that's what I think we do really well is, you know, all the coaches on the app are either physical therapists, chiropractors, certified strength and conditioning specialists, golf pros. I mean, we understand the human body at the highest level. And this is going to dovetail into what you said about the asymmetries. I'll give you one example.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine a driver. Okay. So you're a right-handed golfer, you're hitting your driver, and let's talk about a beautiful swing, because that's what we all want. So when you impact the ball as a right-handed golfer, if you looked at the spine angle, and the angle of the low back would be kind of compressed on the right side. Can everybody envision that? So you're impacting the ball. The right side of your body is a little bit compressed, and the left side of the body is a little bit stretched out and elongated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine.
Yep.
That's a beautiful swing path and trajectory. However, if you do that over and over and over again, what happens is there's muscles on the right side of the abdomen and the rib cage. They get stronger and stronger and stronger and shorter and shorter and tighter. The muscles on the left side of the body oftentimes get stretched out and weaker. Well, at some point, this is a ticking time bomb because you have a gross imbalance in your low back and the lumbar spine. And if you want healthy discs and facet joints and ligaments and muscles, you've got to balance that out. So what we do is we simply do movement patterns from the opposite side of the body that then compresses a little bit the left side of the body, stretches out a little bit the right side of the body. So that's one example of how you want to make the body symmetrical from left to right, and how things over time, it sneaks up on you. And that's why some people's backs, you know, they're like, oh, I've been fine. I golfed all season and I went to pick up a tee and my back went out. Well, it's not the traumatic nature of picking up a tee. It's that you've been doing these repetitive motions over and over again, and then you sit in the cart, and then you sat on your plane, and then you sat in your car, and you weren't on the Golf Forever app stretching out and strengthening and balancing the body, and then all of a sudden this all kind of came to a spearhead. And, again, that's an exaggerated example, but trust me,
sure.
that does happen. People – have come into my clinic many times. I went to pick up a pencil or grab a carton of milk and something happened.
Yeah. And I kind of equate to something similar is, you know, we've heard now for a number of years, you know, because so many people work in offices now, they're sitting at their computer desk and they're kind of mm-hmm. hunched over and they're, you know, on their laptops or whatever. And, you know, you start to see more people have that sort of rounded shoulder look, and there's an imbalance between their shoulders and their chest. And so I kind of equate that something similar to what you're talking about is if you're doing the same thing all the time and you're not doing things to sort of compensate or to develop other areas, then you get that sort of – so that's essentially really what you're talking about, is you're making those same movements all the time, and it's repetitive, and it might look good, but then because you're not balancing yourself out, then when you try to do something else, sometimes, you know, like you said, picking up something as a tee or even a pencil can be all it takes. And how many times have we seen that where and especially as we get older, because we start to lose certain abilities in our body, and it's more important to make sure – And just to sort of repeat something that you said earlier, you know, there's nothing wrong with going to the gym and, you know, getting into some sort of a workout. But quite often what we see, and again, more so I think with the men, is they get into more muscle building and strength training and things like that, which certainly, you know, can help. But there's a lot of other things that need to happen if you want it to impact your golf game. It's not just about and that's why if you see a lot of big, bulky, you know, muscular guys that don't work on the things that you're talking about, yeah, they can generate speed, but they're not really as proficient in their golf swing as they could be if they were doing the right and correct movements. Am I on the right path here?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's, you know, the term used to be sports specificity, and we've gotten away a little bit from that in the strength and conditioning community, but they're all like the first thing you do as a strength coach, the athlete comes in. And again, this could be just a civilian off the street. I use the athlete as everybody. If you have a body, you are an athlete. So the athlete comes in, and the first thing you do is you say, "Hey, Bob, what are you looking to do? What are your goals?" And you know, they could be a number of goals, but I want to play better golf is almost always on top of it. And you know, I've got some aches and pains. I want to clear up that. And you know, they might say, I want to maybe look a little bit better. I want, or, you know, gosh, my jeans aren't fitting. I probably should lose a little bit of weight. So you've got your marching orders, and then it's the strength coach's job to match the programming to the goals. What a lot of inexperienced coaches do, strength coaches or personal trainers, they kind of have a cookie cutter, right? They've had something that's worked in the past, or maybe that's worked on them. And they just kind of apply that to everybody. But as a physical therapist and strength coach, it is extremely specific how you work with somebody. So, for instance, if a woman comes into me and says, I want to hit the ball further, okay, very common. Mm-hmm. And I assess her and I say, gosh, she's got tons of mobility. She's actually almost hypermobile, you know, like she did ballet in high school. But I've noticed her strength is she's a little, you know, I call it noodly, right? Like, instead of having good muscle tone, you're kind of like a little loose and noodly, like a wet spaghetti noodle. And so I say, you know what, with this gal, I'm going to focus a little bit more on strength and a little bit less on flexibility because she's already got that. Her husband comes in and I assess him and I say, dang, the dude's pretty strong. He skis a lot. He mountain bikes, but he is stiff as a board. And he's starting to get that slumped back posture like you talked about because he works, you know, he's in finance and he works at the computer all day. Man, we better get this guy in a serious mobility and flexibility program. And so it doesn't mean we won't work on strength, but it's going to look a little different. And that's why when you get on the app in Golf Forever, we have a proprietary assessment that looks at your flexibility, looks at your core strength, looks at your balance, and then give you kind of an algorithm score, and that's how we deliver specific programming, personalized programming to the individual user, the consumer, that meets them where they are. You know, so if they're a high-level athlete, they'll score really well, and guess what? You're going to start getting workouts like my 300 workout. You want to hit the ball 300 yards? You can train with me. But I also have workouts, your shoulders are a little wonky or your back is tweaky. Guess what? Here's my better back workout. And we really kind of slow things down. We work on core strength. We stretch out the hips and the mid-back, and we kind of build people up slowly. One thing I wanted to note that I love you brought up, Ted, is the posture. So
yes,
posture is a huge component of our program. And, in fact, in almost every fundamental warm-up, there will be a specific postural alignment drill. And if you watched all the good golfers – let me take a golfer. So let's say you've got the guy that's been an office worker and then they drive, or maybe a truck driver that's slumped over the wheel of the car for, you know, 12, 18 hours a day. They get out of the car, they've kind of got, they look like a question mark, right? Their upper back is literally curved around. they cannot make a big turn. They cannot have a full swing because their chest and anterior shoulders are caved in what's called a thoracic kyphotic posture. And so you can't make a big turn. So what do? We start stretching out the anterior chest and shoulders. And we do exercises that strengthen up the backside of the torso, like the scapular muscles in the back, the retractors that kind of hold you upright and make you, you know, Sunday school posture or military posture, right, where you stand, you know, soldier mm-hmm. head up, chest out, shoulders down and back type posture. And if just a simple practicing those postural drills 2-3 times a week can help correct your posture, and it will make you a better golfer, but it also gets you out of shoulder pain, gets you out of back pain, and has you functioning well into your lifespan. So it's kind of neat for me because, listen, I want everybody to lower their handicap and just stripe it off the tee. I mean, it's just the best feeling in the world. But even yeah. more importantly for me, because I come from – I've seen people at their worst after horrific car accidents or can't, you know, they come out of chemo and radiation therapy, and they're just they've been wasted away. I've seen people like that, and your health is the single most important component of your lifestyle that you should be focused on. You know, nutrition, of course, what you ingest, but yep. your health, your fitness, your wellness, your vitality, that's everything. If you're not doing something, and I'm telling this to you, to the pros, to your students, to anybody listening that will listen to me, when you're investing in a savings account, right, every day for retirement or every month or every quarter, hopefully people are investing for their retirement. You don't want to turn 68 and decide, I'm going to retire, and you look at your bank account and there's nothing in there. Well, similarly, you don't want to turn 68 and look at your health savings account and realize you've made no deposits for the last 40 years, right, since college or whatever it was. You've got to make a little weekly deposit. It could be one day, it could be 2 days, it could be 3 or 4 days. And to the extent that you make those little deposits, you're gonna play better golf for sure. You're gonna play pain-free golf, but you have now the ability to do it forever, and maybe even have an X factor where you bring energy and vitality to your job, to your family, to your loved ones, to your community. And that's when you can really actualize your human potential, in my opinion.
No, you're spot on. And, you know, it's interesting because earlier in the program, I have a pros and we were talking about, sort of mastering your golf practice routine. And one of the things that we as golf professionals struggle with our students is they're unwilling to invest in their game. You know, they want to hit it farther. They want to do this. So they'll come out for, you know, a group of lessons. And during the lesson, they'll be engaged. They'll do that. But then in between the lessons, they do nothing. They don't focus on it. They might play a little bit, but they don't do anything. So it just exactly what you're talking about with the fitness, we have the same issues in golf is, you know, they want to be better players, or they'll come out, you know, a couple of weeks before a major event. And I'm not talking at a pro level, but I'm, you know, maybe it's their club championship or maybe it's a corporate event and they don't want to look foolish. So that all of a sudden now they want these Band-Aid solutions to make them better. But all year long, they've done nothing to invest in their golf game. So it's the same thing. If you're not doing anything to invest in your physical being, then you've got to expect as you get a little bit older that you're going to have some aches and pains and other issues along the way. So as we get ready to wrap up here, Pete, let's talk about where we can send them, what's the website, and what do they need to do to get things started?
Yeah, well, golfforever.com is the website, and there's a lot of information on there. You can also search on YouTube if you wanted to see a Scottie Scheffler workout and just kind of have that validation that, you know, we've got 400 PGA and LPGA touring pros that are playing at high levels right now that are either using our app, using the Golf Forever Swing Trainer, or using both. And you know, so the proof is in the pudding. The pros are using it, which means it should work for everybody. But you go on golfforever.com. You can order the swing trainer. When you get the swing trainer, it's really slick. There's just a little QR code. You scan it, and it pulls up the app, and you just put your name and email address in the app, and you're up and running. And then it will take you through an assessment. So you got to have a little bit of time, you know, to do the assessment. And then we figure out where you're at in your fitness journey, and we will send you your first daily workout. It's a personalized workout only for you, and we're going to work on all of the Golf Forever Big Three: flexibility, core strength, and overall body strength and balance, and then also, you know, some bonus stuff. I really get into, because I was a martial artist, I get into fluidity training, and, you know, I'll even have people have their eyes closed during specific drills, because I want you to heighten the senses, like your proprioceptors and those nerve endings in your muscles and your joints. There's ways to trick the body into advancing faster, and, you know, so there's some fun stuff on there. The other thing you could do is, we're in retail stores like the PGA Superstore. So next time you're in buying a $1,000 driver, go drop a couple $100 on a swing trainer. It's going to change your life.
Right.
Or Golf Galaxy. We're in Dick's Sporting Goods, and you know, starting to get in a lot of the retail stores out there as well.
Yeah, you're in the PGA Superstores. Yeah, Dick's Sporting Goods and Golf Galaxy, just to name a few. So yeah, it's definitely expanding. And you're exactly right, Pete. You know, you're seeing pro golfers like who obviously endorse Scottie Scheffler, you know, Ryan Palmer, Justin Leonard, just to name a few. And I know there's many, many others, but those are some of the big names, obviously, that people know right away. And these guys are using, you know, Golf Forever swing trainer, and I'm sure going through the programs that are provided by the app. And the nice thing about this is something you can do at home. You don't have to go to a lot of people say, well, I don't have time to go to the gym, or I don't. These are things that you can do right at home. And, you know, the equipment, you don't have to, you know, the swing trainer, once you've got it, you've got it. And I like the fact that you're helping people of all ages. It's not just, you know, people look at this thing, oh, okay, well, maybe it's, you know, if I was 20 years younger, I'd do that. No, this is something, whether you're 50s, 60s, or beyond, there's a routine that can be customized for you based on obviously the assessment that you can do. And you're going to notice things. You're going to find improvements, not just in your golf game, but in your overall health. And this is really what you're trying to prove. This is your, if I was to sum it up, your health initiative is really to make people obviously better golfers, but to make them healthier and you know, enjoy their golden years or what have you of their life, and not sort of sitting around complaining about their aches and pains. If you want to do something, you got to get off the couch and you got to do it. Right. Go ahead.
And what I love what you just said is, it's not just for pro golfers. It's actually, it works better for people that aren't pros, because when you start changing something that you maybe haven't been working on, you notice the most dramatic changes at those levels. So if you're in your 50s, 60s, 70s, and you haven't necessarily been on a consistent routine, or you haven't been stretching, or you haven't been doing core work or balance work, you're going to notice dramatic improvements in how you feel, how you play, and even, to be honest, how you look. We have a lot of app subscribers that are like, you know, I joined because I wanted to improve my golf game, but now I'm kind of addicted to like the fitness component, where I, you know, I'm just looking better in my clothes. I'm feeling better. I have to have more energy. And you can do it anywhere. The unit comes with a door anchor, which literally you can slide into any door. So in your garage, in your den, in your office, in your, you know, family room. It also can hook around any solid object. So a fence, a railing, a tree, a golf cart. I hook it up to golf carts all the time. And so there's really no excuse not to do 5-10 minutes. And then, you know, what a lot of our app subscribers have found is, just becomes addictive. And, you know, you find certain instructors. By the way, we send you personalized programs, but as you get going on the app and get familiar with it, you can like certain workouts, you can repeat workouts, or you can like certain instructors. And so maybe you've got a favorite instructor, and then you can do more workouts with them. So it's really a personalized training system that's designed to be used in the home or on vacation or at the golf course. But listen, I'm begging you folks, whether you use Golf Forever, the swing trainer, or nothing at all, you've got to warm up your body. You've got to work on some flexibility and figure out a way to do it. You got to work on some core strength, figure out a way to do it. You got to work on some balance, figure out a way to do it. It's just pretty convenient. You know, we've bundled everything together and made it super user-friendly and kind of hold your hand along the way. So if you want to do some of that stuff, please investigate our training system.
Couldn't agree more. And again, if you go to golfforever.com, all of the information there, you can get the swing trainer right there, or if you're visiting one of the retail outlets that we mentioned, you can certainly purchase it there and then get the app, get the assessment done, and get started right away. Pete, I want to thank you very much for coming on tonight and really opening, hopefully, a lot of people's eyes. Again, I hear so much from students and other coaches as well, how we hear people wanting to improve their golf game, but there's a component that goes with it. It's not just about learning the swing and becoming a better swinger of the golf club, but you've got to get yourself in shape, and there's a right way and a wrong way to do it, and you guys have certainly found the right way to do it. So thank you for coming on and sharing that tonight, and I appreciate it.
Absolutely. And in closing, because you mentioned something about not wanting to practice in the process. One of my favorite quotes of all time, I'm a Bruce Lee guy. So Bruce Lee once said, In every passionate pursuit, the pursuit counts more than the object being pursued. The pursuit counts more. It's the journey. You know, you've heard this cliche over and over,
But
it's about the process. So just, you know, suck it up, start the process, whatever it is you're trying to do, and hunker down and give it 6, 8, 10 weeks. And I'm telling you, it is pronounced what you're going to notice.
I couldn't agree more. Thank you for bringing a lot of passion to the movement, if you will, and particularly to Golf Forever and the Swing Trainer. And thank you for doing what you do and keep up the great work. And you're welcome, Pete, to come back anytime and share your thoughts with my audience. But thank you for joining me this
evening.
It's been fun.
I want to see you on the – thank you, Ted. I want to see you on the course. I need a lesson, man.
Yeah. Well, we may have to trade out. You may have to help me with some of the workout section, but maybe we'll make a swap there. But Pete, I appreciate it for coming on tonight and much continued success. You guys do a great job.
Thanks, Ted.
All right. Have a good one. Bye-bye. All right. That was Pete Holman, the co-creator of Golf Forever. And obviously, as he's mentioned, he's a physical therapist and certified strength and conditioning specialist and worked in with a lot of top athletes and obviously some Hollywood celebs as well, working with Fortune 500 business owners, trying to help them become better golfers. And obviously, it's a working relationship in the golf community. Is it's not just about learning the fundamentals of the golf swing and how to swing the club better, but getting yourself in certain shape. There's certain core and muscle groups that are engaged in the golf swing that a lot of people overlook. And just going to the gym, pumping iron and lifting weights and things like that is not necessarily going to be conducive to a great golf swing. Doesn't hurt, but you've got to also, there's other components that have to be factored in. So, again, special thanks to Pete Holman from Golf Forever. Also, a special thanks to Clint Wright and John Decker for joining me earlier on the Coach's Corner panel. Next week, I'll be back with another Coach's Corner panel. We'll also have another special guest on our Golf Breaks travel segment by PGA Tour with another great guest. And, of course, my good friend and travel expert, Robert Kaufman, will be joining me and another special guest. On a quick note, just as we get ready to wrap up, I want to remind everybody we're getting down to the wire here, so you really need to engage. June 7th to 9th is going to be another Golf Tips Golf School retreat, if you will, that's going to be up at Macklemore. Which is just in the Lookout Mountain area of Georgia, just a couple of hours northwest, I believe, of Atlanta, and about 40 minutes outside of Chattanooga, Tennessee. So it's kind of right smack dab in the middle of those areas. Beautiful golf course, great facility up there, and they've got a new Hilton that just opened up earlier this spring, so you want to be checking that out as well. But if you're interested in attending our golf school, we're getting down to the wire here, so you need to reach out to me, Ted Odorico, and my email address is editor@golftipsmag.com. That's editor@golftipsmag.com. Shoot me an email. I'll send you all the particulars, let you know what to expect at the event and the costs and all that kind of stuff. But you need to act fast because we need to get everything booked up and firmed up here in the next little bit. So if you're interested, reach out to me at editor@golftipsmag.com. And again, my name is Ted Odorico, O-D-O-R-I-C-O is how you correctly spell it. Reach out, say I'm interested in getting more information and maybe attending the golf school. The dates, again, are June 7th to 9th, so we're only just a few weeks out. and it's at the beautiful Macklemore Resort in Georgia. It's about 2,000 feet up in the air in the mountains, Lookout Mountain to be exact, and just some beautiful, breathtaking views. Great golf, a lot of great top instruction. Some of the top 25 instructors from my team are going to be there from the magazine that you'll be working with, so no excuses for not improving your game. So, again, reach out to me at editor@golftipsmag.com if you want more information about the Golf Tips Golf School coming up here in just a few weeks. On that note, again, thanks to all the guests tonight. I look forward to seeing you guys next week here on Golf Talk Live. God bless, and everybody have a great weekend.
Thanks for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this week's broadcast of Golf Talk Live. We'd like to thank this week's Coach's Corner panel, and a special thank you to tonight's guest. Remember to join Ted every Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. Central on Golf Talk Live. And be sure to follow Ted on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you're interested in being a guest on Golf Talk Live, send Ted an email at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. This has been a production of the iGolf Sports Network.